Hello and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the MBOM podcast. Today on the podcast, I am very excited to be rejoined by Kaya Minlin. Kaya and I chatted about a year ago, and we talked about how having a small business can actually be really profitable, and the idea that quality over quantity is super important. So we'll have a link to that other episode in the show notes. So if you haven't checked out that episode, make sure you do. And for those of you who are hearing Kaya for the first time, she is a yoga therapist and educator, and she's been teaching for nearly 20 years, and she's very, very well studied in therapeutic yoga, yoga, Ayurveda, Vedic astrology, Sanskrit, and yogic texts, and much more. And today on the podcast, I am really excited to be diving into how Kaya pivoted her business. So we've been having a lot of conversations about online business, online yoga over the last couple of months, because that's really where we're at in the yoga industry right now. And Kaya actually did this before the pandemic hit. So a lot of what you're going to hear us talk about is the different things that she did to take her business online before we even knew anything about COVID-19 or this global pandemic that's currently happening. And I feel that there's a lot that we can learn from this conversation, because she talks about why she decided to do what she did, how she was able to pivot her business, tips for anyone out there who wants to pivot their business online as well as all of the business lessons that she's learned throughout this journey. Kaya's signature program, Nectar of the Gita, will also be starting on July 23rd. So it's coming up in just a little bit of time. And she has given listeners a promo code for that. So stick around to the end, and I will leave you that promo code for 25% off. I'll tell you a little bit more about the course and all of that good stuff. So I'm super excited to dive into this episode with Kaya. And just before we get there, just a quick word from our sponsor, Offering Tree. This episode is brought to you by Offering Tree. When you're a yoga teacher and you're trying to build your digital presence, it can be daunting, especially right now when you are trying to take your offerings online as fast as possible. Offering Tree set out to make creating your digital presence fun, easy, and affordable. With one account, you can create a website in minutes that has your schedule built right in. They also have email marketing tools to collect email addresses, send newsletters, and automated emails to your subscribers. It all works seamlessly together with one account and one subscription. Forget spending all your time and energy just trying to remember what account does what and what your login information is. On top of that, Offering Tree has an embedded scheduling feature, so if you already have a website that you love, you can use it for online payments and scheduling. They have also just announced that they now have Stripe integration so that people from Canada, the UK, Australia, and 30 plus countries can accept payments using Offering Tree. This is something that a lot of people have been asking for, and it is finally live. So that is super exciting. To learn more about what Offering Tree can do for your digital presence, visit offeringtree.com/MBOM. Offering Tree has been supporting MBOM for over a year now, and I not only love the product, but I also love the people. And Offering Tree is also providing special pricing for MBOM listeners. So be sure to visit offeringtree.com/MBOM to receive your discount. All right, now here's Kaya. Welcome back to the podcast today, Kaya. I'm really excited to have you here with me.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Amanda.
Yeah, I am so excited to see where this conversation goes and to just have you back and to be hearing what you've been up to over the last year. And when I was looking at the episode for last year, it came out June 24th, 2019. And at the time of recording, it is June 3rd, 2020. So I'm pretty sure we talked like almost exactly a year ago, which is super, super cool that this just kind of worked out, that we're having a catch up after a year. And I was wondering if you could just tell myself and listeners like what you've been up to over the last year since we chatted.
Sure. Yeah, that's so funny that it's been a year. And what a year. So when we talked last, I was still living in the Bay Area. So bustling, very busy urban environment with tons of yoga, you know, on every corner. And I had a yoga therapy studio. And I think I had just wrapped a YTT program like the day before we talked or something. And my family and I were in the process of starting, getting ready to move to the Pacific Northwest to a quiet little town where we knew nobody. And, so I, since a year ago, have closed a studio and have shifted from what was majority teaching, in person, a weekly class and a few in-person advanced teacher modules a year and, you know, guest teaching in person in yoga trainings and yoga therapy trainings and a little bit online, to flipping that to where the majority of my work has been online, with really planned a small percentage of teaching in person in the form of teacher modules. Continuing ed modules for teachers. Of course, now since January, I haven't taught anything in person and I've been completely teaching online. So I've moved and shifted, sort of flipped my teaching reality into almost 100% online space.
Yeah, that's really inspiring to hear. And I think that it's amazing that you were able to shift your business online before, you know, this pandemic even hit, before we even knew that COVID-19 was a thing, perhaps before it even was a thing in general. And I'm curious, like, what was kind of going through your mind when you decided to make the move to the new place? Like, did you consider opening another studio, getting in-person clients, or was it very much like, we want to make this move so that our lifestyle is more aligned and I know that I can transition what I've been doing online?
Right. It was the latter. I was really clear that I was not going to, unless someone forced me, I was not going to open up a center or teach regular weekly in-person classes, as much as I loved and still love teaching people in person. Since 2009, 2010-ish. So for about 10 years, I had been shifting to teaching more and more longtime yoga practitioners and teachers, and shifting more and more to focusing on retreats and continuing ed modules and things like that. So I was really clear that I was pretty much done doing weekly public yoga classes, at least in the studio model, and, you know, in person, and doing lots of one-on-one yoga therapy session clients in person. We wanted as a family to shift into sort of a quieter, more village atmosphere that felt like a better fit for us, sort of retreat environment, because we support so many people that we really felt the need to be in a more nourishing, nutritive environment for my husband and me. He's a Vedic astrologer, which I may have mentioned in our last interview. And for our small children, it just was a better fit for us. And so I knew that, it was just going to work better for me to focus mostly online, and that would fit the lifestyle better.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear. And just as you were describing that, I was just feeling like there's so much peace to be, you know, outside of a city and in a quiet space and to be close to nature. And I mean, I guess nobody really could have predicted what was going to happen at the start of 2020. But I feel like, you know, we were chatting before that I live in a small town too, and it's really nice to be outside of a city with everything that's going on right now, and to be, you know, have access to nature where you don't have to fear the trees getting you sick and stuff like that. So sounds like it was definitely a good time to make that move.
It was very good timing, for sure, for us personally and, you know, for us individually, but considering the collective circumstance in the culture and across the globe, we were really glad to be in a little bit more of a retreat type of environment.
I want to dive into your online business and what you've been doing as you've transitioned online. So can you tell myself and listeners, you know, with your business as you shifted online, you know, what are you offering? What did you create? And kind of what that whole thing looks like?
Sure. So talk about transformation and growth. Definitely this year has been sort of, for me personally, an acceleration of that process in terms of my business. I mean, on the one hand, what I'm doing now was a long time coming and an unfoldment over, you know, the course of 19 years of teaching was all headed in this direction. But this past year required a lot of transformation, whether from my tech and some of my pedagogy, which has to shift when you do things online instead of in person. So what I'm doing now is that I hired a company to build an online learning platform for me. And they're in the process now actually of helping refine a member site for me as well, because I'm teaching asana practices online too. So I have this platform where I offer my teaching. And so in the form of a few large online courses that I teach live and then are recorded so that students can access them in their own time as needed. So I have two kind of more major online programs. One is a Yoga Nidra training that's done in 7 weeks. And the other is my Bhagavad Gita program, which is done in 3 6-week segments over the course of about 9 months. So that's a pretty major program that I teach live. And just to show the sort of transformation of both of those are both programs that I first taught in person. In the case of the Yoga Nidra, I was teaching that in person in various forms and formats for a bunch of years. And so I taught both the Bhagavad Gita and Yoga Nidra for teachers in person. And then they both were audio courses. And then they were taught live streaming and recorded, and I did it. I DIY'd it actually on the Weebly platform as sort of a transition phase, because I knew I wanted to build my own platform, but I didn't feel quite ready yet. I'm definitely an experiential learner, and so I felt I needed to do it on my own first to see what worked, what didn't work, I would want a platform to be when I was ready to build my own platform. So I did everything on Weebly for a year. And then I had the platform built for me for those programs to live on live and recorded. And then I have a few smaller, what they call evergreen programs that are just 2 to 4 hours long that are on that platform. And then I started teaching during COVID. I started teaching a weekly yoga class, and now I'm building a member site where people can access an extensive library of practices with me. So we can talk about that too if you want. But those are kind of the main things that I'm doing. And my plan was to still teach about 4 in-person retreats and teacher modules per year. But of course, that's all postponed until we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like we have no idea when we'll be back in person. So yeah, that's all up in the air. I totally get that. And yeah. One of the things that I really love about everything that you're talking about with this business is you've got, it sounds like, a lot of different kind of, I guess, pillars of the business, like the evergreen programs or mini courses, the signature programs that you offer where people get to come be in person, not in person, like do some live portions. You also have video recordings of them. Those happen at set times. That's right, right? They have set times during the year. Yeah. And then building out this membership site, which will, from a business perspective, I mean, be reoccurring, like reoccurring revenue, reoccurring income, but then also have your members, you know, engaging with you on a more regular basis, which I think is really cool. So I love that you've got kind of, you know, 3 elements of how to build an online business in your business.
Right. Yeah. I mean, interestingly, I hadn't quite put it in these terms before, but I do always say that I teach as much as possible the full spectrum of the yoga tradition, you know, from the practices to the pedagogy to, you know, yoga and Ayurveda and Vedic astrology. So I think of my teachings as being full spectrum. And so I guess out of that, my offerings, in a sense, kind of offer that full spectrum as well.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I can see that so clearly. And one of the things that I think is also really great is the fact that you did the DIY, do it yourself, DIY. I was like, no, that's wrong. That's not right. DIY. And I think that, so first off, I think that for anyone listening who wants to do this, if you have the capacity to hire somebody and it is not in your capacity to do this, I think it's fine to just hire somebody. But I feel very similarly to you in that I learn best by doing. And I think that for me, it's like I can clearly see the places where, you know, that are really hard for me and the things that are challenging. And I feel like there's something about creating something fully yourself and seeing it complete, whether or not you're like, this is the worst thing I've created or this is the best thing I've created. Like there's something that's really just amazing about knowing that you put like blood, sweat, and tears into creating something yourself.
Yeah, completely. I like to get my hands dirty. And I suppose I'm not an idealist. I'm very much a realist. And so I'm not a fan of what I see a lot in the yoga world, which is, you know, people comparing what people say, you know, don't compare your, what do they say? Don't compare your middle to someone else's. What is that expression? Something.
It's, what is it? Don't compare your middle to somebody else's, like, I can't remember what the word is, but it's kind of like right. Their completion, right? Like their completion phase.
Right, because you're never at the end. But in any case, you know, I guess what I want to say is on the one hand, we have people that just want to do everything themselves and never ask for help and never hire out. And that's not a good way in the long run to do business, especially as you grow. But then to think that you can just throw money at everything and hire someone or someone else for a lot of money to do everything for you before you really know whether it's the right direction, that seems risky to me. So I guess as a realist, I thought these are the programs that I want to move online. And I think it's going to work and be meaningful and effective for students. And I think that it should be done in this way, but I won't really know until I do it. And so why spend thousands of dollars on building something when I haven't experienced in the field whether it's going to work for me and for the students? So I really wanted that transition phase of doing it myself in a smaller way, in an affordable way before I took the plunge.
Yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense to me. And I think too, you've had these programs for a while and they went through many different sort of transition phases to get where they are now. But I think one thing I've really learned with this is like when you put something out for the first time, I mean, you don't necessarily know how people are going to respond to it. And I think that if you think that your first iteration is going to be your last iteration, it's a little bit naive when it comes to any programming, but particularly online programming. And so I definitely agree with you. Like, I think going through it in some capacity and doing kind of maybe like a beta version or your own version that you create before you pay somebody to create this thing that you don't even know what it's going to fully look like makes a lot of sense. And also like saves you a lot of money and helps you learn a lot from that experience.
Right. And along the way, one of the things I always do, I mean, first of all, I always am engaging with students directly. For me, it doesn't really work to pre-record things in a room by myself. My teaching really rests on that relationship, which we talked about when you interviewed me a year ago. That's really intrinsic. And then also getting feedback from the people that study with me is so useful to know what's working, what to do more of, and what to let go of that you thought seemed like a good idea at the time and really isn't effective, whether it's pedagogy or technology.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I love that. And I'm curious, you know, based on this experience that you've gone through over, you know, the last couple months to a year as you've taken your business online, what have been some of like the biggest learnings that you've had?
I'm trying to think about any mistakes that I've made that I've needed to fix. I guess I'll start with what I've gotten confirmation on. And this is really about myself. I think we all need to get really clear about what our individual purpose is at any given time so that we can really lean into that more. And so I really look for how can I be the best. And so what I have gotten confirmation on is that for me able to directly engage with students, to have a sense of relationship and meaning, have a sense that the students feel that I am really teaching them as individuals, is really important to my work. And so one of the things I got confirmation on is the value of the live experience, even for those that are attending recordings. The fact that I'm teaching live, because that's when I'm at my best, that shines through. So that what I've heard from students is that even when they're doing the recording, they're amazed at how close it feels to being live and in person, when that hasn't always been their experience when they do an online program. So that's really gratifying to hear. And it just reinforces for me, okay, for me, Kaya, don't stop teaching live. That's working. And then that has also made me increase the amount of Q&A time that I give as part of my programs. That gets a little bit more extended. It's also confirmed for me what I can and can't have a VA do, because I do get a lot of personal emails from people. And so I'm really clear that I need to be the person to respond to certain things that people share with me, very intimate things in that relationship, because of what they're learning, and that my teaching style is meant to be very personally meaningful, even when I'm teaching something like philosophy, let alone the practices. So I just got so much more confirmation that even in the online space, I have to be able to engage directly with people and have them feel seen and heard and known, and that also lights up something in me, in my ability to be my best version of the teacher that I am.
Yeah, I think that's amazing that you've been able to discover that and get clear on that and then make sure that your offerings reflect that. And I think that what I'm kind of hearing and I guess learning from online courses is that, you know, if it's like a short kind of masterclass or workshop, I think that's something that people can sit down and kind of just take notes and watch somebody, whether or not it's like a recording or just watch somebody with like a presentation or watch somebody talk about something. But it seems that, you know, people engage most effectively with programs when there is an online component for it, where they can ask questions, where they can be with that person that is offering the program. Because oftentimes, I mean, they're paying for you. They're paying for the knowledge that you have. You know, people could go take any other program. They could go read the Bhagavad Gita on their own. And then, you know, I mean, it's so hard to understand the Bhagavad Gita, no, but, but you know, maybe they could read some online stuff on it.
Right.
But you are like the thing that makes them want to come to that, and being able to have access to that, I think is so important, because that's how people connect and feel that human connection. And we need that, even if we're behind a screen. We need to feel connected to other people, because that's how we really learn and grow and understand the things we're consuming.
Right. Especially in yoga, of course, which is so much about that teacher-student relationship. And real yogic process is an intimate process. And so, right, for me, I think it's very important that it's live, and maybe true in general, but I don't want to say, because I don't have someone else's karma. So I do think there are people out there that are producing really fantastic, you know, shiny, beautifully produced, recorded material in the yoga world and in other fields. I just really got confirmation that that's not necessarily for me. That's not where I shine, and that's, you know, that's okay. And so then I can just do more of what I do best. And the live, you know, teaching live is a different thing because we'll talk about what's current, which you wouldn't do if you were doing something that you wanted to live as a recording forever, or you make funny jokes that you wouldn't necessarily make if you want it to live forever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely got a different flavor to it. And so is there any other kind of major learnings or takeaways you've had from building these online programs and taking your business online?
Well, one, the tech, of course, that's a huge learning curve. And it's also messy. I mean, even hiring a professional company that specializes in building platforms, there have continued to be glitches that come up here and there because it's just inevitable. And, you know, that's just something that you sort of have to know going in. That's going to be part of it. It's not going to necessarily be smooth from the get-go. And you just sort of deal with it as gracefully and graciously as you possibly can. And I think actually because of that, it means that your teaching has to be really on point. What you're offering has to be sort of good enough that any tech issues that come up in communications and then people being able to access stuff and they forgot their password, you know, there's just so many things that come up that the teaching has to be so good that all of that stuff feels small to the student because it is inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely makes sense to me. And I think, you know, the tech is definitely, I think, the most challenging thing when it comes to running an online business in my experience too. And it's been really interesting. I was telling you before we hit record on this that, you know, the yoga studios that I work with two different ones, one in the US, one in Canada. And they both, you know, pivoted their business as the pandemic hit and took their business online, which, I mean, it's such a blessing to be able to do that with your business because I have lots of other friends in the wellness space that haven't been able to do that. I mean, massage is extremely challenging, mm-hmm. if not impossible online, mm-hmm. next to impossible. You know, that's very much about the physical touch, which we can't have right now. And it's been, you know, I've been working online since 2015 and I would have probably previously said like, yeah, I could help a studio take their classes online. And it's been challenging. Like the tech side of it has been really hard in ways that I didn't expect. And, you know, there's always something between internet connection, microphones dying, you know, students not able to get into class, Zoom passwords, updates on software. You know, there's always something to kind of think about when it comes to the tech side of things. And not to say that these things don't exist in person, but I think that when you're in the physical space, you have this ability to communicate with people in a way that is really challenging if the internet goes down or somebody can't hear you on a computer screen. So I definitely hear you on the technology.
Yeah, there's just so many additional things to deal with when you're using technology in order to have people access you. A million different things that come up. And so definitely if you're moving in that direction, team or having a VA or having support ultimately is so superful. And yeah, just having some grace about it and knowing that this is just the nature of the beast. That's just how it is. And I guess the other thing that I've learned and I'm, you know, still in the process of playing with is when it's teaching asana, that there are some pedagogical, you know, teaching method changes, adaptations that I've had to do in order to do that effectively. Teaching, in other words, my teaching asana in an online way is different in a number of significant ways than me teaching in person, beyond just not being able to, say, do hands-on, you know, alignments or whatever. There's some things that I have to change in order to make the teaching and the practices as effective as they would be in person. My teaching style is different, if that makes any sense. So there is a learning curve there in terms of teaching methodology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it totally makes sense to me. I think that it's different when you're seeing somebody through a screen versus in person. And this is actually a question that I've been asked, is kind of how do you actually shift your teaching? Is there anything specific that you found has been really helpful for you in terms of the way you use your words or your cues or anything like that, that's really helped you to ensure that you're communicating what you want to be communicating to your students through a screen?
Yes. So I'll preface it though by saying that I think it's different if you were, say, doing one-on-one where you are looking at the student the whole time and there's only one student to account for, or if you're doing only live streaming and not recording. So what I'm doing is I'm teaching live. So sometimes there might be 40 people in a class, but it's getting recorded for those people and all members to do in their own time. So that right there means that my teaching style is a little bit different. But I'll give a couple examples of pedagogically what's different for me, given that that's how I'm doing it. One thing is that I talk a little bit more than I would if it were in person. And that's partly because the practice that I teach is very, very slow. It's not the vinyasa flow type of thing. It will look, if you're looking at the video, you might think that it's frozen because we're staying so still for sometimes a couple minutes, that if I weren't talking the whole time, I mean, there's definitely pauses where I'm allowing for that silence, which is so important, but I'm talking a little bit more than I would in person because I don't want someone to suddenly worry and have anxiety that the video is frozen or their internet isn't working or something. So that just sort of sustains my presence throughout the teaching, given that it's a very slow practice, is that I'm talking more. Another thing that's drastically different is that in my teaching in person, I never did practices with the students. It wasn't like me modeling the whole time and the students copying me. I would demonstrate if needed, but then I just sit in my perch or move around the move around the room assisting. But then return to my perch so that I could see what everyone else is doing. So with this, I'm actually participating. I'm doing the practices the whole time as I'm teaching them so that students have a visual anytime they need one. Because that wasn't necessary in person, or it isn't necessary in person. If a student is confused, I can see that, and then it can go over to them and help them individually. In this format, if they're watching a recording or they're, you know, they're live, but I'm not looking at all of their bodies, they need to be able to look at the screen, I think, as needed to see, okay, this is what we're doing right now, or this is what the alignment is. So I'm doing the practice the whole time. And because I'm recording it, I'm not doing what I would do in a group class, which is that I might say to an individual, Tim, straighten your elbow, you know, or Ruth, lean in this direction. I'm not doing that because I don't think that every time students listen to a recording, they're going to want to hear me say, Tim, straighten your elbow. So I'm withholding those kinds of comments to keep it relatively neutral and for everyone again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes funny when it's like, you know, Tim, who's not the one who showed up for the original class, is like, straighten my elbow. What? but yeah, those all make a lot of sense to me. And I was just thinking about the one studio that I work with here in Canmore, like my hometown in Canada. Me and the other studio manager have been doing a lot of, you know, assistance with all the classes. And so we're there for a lot of them. And it's really interesting because, especially in our early days with this, we would monitor to make sure there was no tech issues. And it's funny that you mentioned with the slower classes. So with our yin and restorative classes, sometimes I'd be like, oh, I haven't heard them talk for like 5 minutes. Like, is the microphone working? Right. Is everything good? And then, you know, they'd pop back on. And it's just kind of the nature of that style of yoga, is that you really want to have people settle into the pose and get into their own mental space. Yet when you don't have the teacher walking around the room, maybe doing assists, or even just sitting there and knowing that they're present and trusting that you're not going to miss something. I think it can definitely be like you have to modify a little bit for that. And that's something I've fully like witnessed. Not I haven't taught it, but I've witnessed it.
Right. So that's what I'm saying about sort of talking gently throughout, whether I'm, you know, repeating a particular contemplation because I teach according to themes. So maybe I'll bring the contemplation up, but also talking about what could come up. So this is how I would account for different things that different issues that may come up in the room. Something's not working or a common misalignment. Instead of being able to look at all of the bodies and help individuals with the way that I'm teaching, I am lucky that I've been teaching for 19 years in person before teaching asana online. So I really have a very clear idea of most of the things that are going to come up for people. Mm-hmm. And I can't account for all of them every time I teach one pose. That would be like a laundry list of talking, but I will name a few, you know. So if such and such is happening, then consider doing this. But if this is happening, then you might want to do that. So I am in my head sort of imagining some of the common things that can come up. I'm also considering who is on the call. So I do this thing before I start recording and start the class. I'm using Zoom. I actually click through all of the faces of the people that are there live so that I have them in my mind. I also do that when I'm teaching my, you know, lecture-based courses like the Gita program. I really look at everyone's name and face, and many of them I do know or I've interacted with in some way, and some of them I've known for years and they've done lots of in-person stuff with me. So I have really a sense of who I'm talking to, even if it's just a handful of the people. What I've found, and I think most yoga teachers can relate to this, is that it just happens that things come in groups. So when one person has a particular issue, there's usually a bunch of people in that particular class that have that same shared issue. And so even if I just know a handful of the people in the class really deeply and intimately, I can sometimes speak to their needs, and I know it's going to be meaningful for a lot of other people in the class without naming names. But I know, oh, that bunch of people, they all have shoulder issues. I bet that's going to be going on right now in the class in general. And so I can speak to some of those needs while I'm teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things we've been doing at the studio here is similar, like asking the teachers to, you know, of course be there early for tech purposes, but also opening the Zoom room, you know, 10 minutes early. And our students know that they can come in and not only can they connect with the teacher, but they have this chance to connect with each other because, you know, they know each other because they practiced in person. And then, you know, getting the teachers to go through exactly like you're talking about, you know, face by face, checking in, asking people what they want to work on, asking them how they're doing, because, you know, particularly right now, that can be a very powerful question for people, making them feel seen and heard when they can't be around people in person. And I think that that's, you know, even though we're behind a screen and things are totally different, I think it's those little things that really help people feel connected. And, you know, like we've talked about, that's such an important part of the yoga practice. It's not just about the physical movements and that sort of thing. That connection piece is so important. So I love that you brought that up, and I love that you're doing that. And that's something for anyone listening who's teaching online, you know, that's a little thing that can make all the difference. Like knowing yeah. who's there, talking to them if you don't know them, you know, engaging with them in a brief conversation, like that makes somebody, that goes from just being like an anonymous person on a call to, you know, feeling like you're really in that space with somebody who wants to get to know you.
Yes, it makes a huge difference. And I do exactly that. I do, everyone that studies with me knows we do 10 minutes early. You can log in, whether it's a yoga class or a philosophy class, it's always 10 minutes ahead of time. We chat or people, Jens, or make comments to each other. And then with my asana classes, well, with all of my classes, there's Q&A afterwards. And with the asana ones, I just think of it sort of like any asana class in person. It never ends at the time of the ending. I mean, you don't just end the class and walk out the door. At least that wasn't how I did it. I know in some studios, there's really a tight squeeze between classes. In my studio, we left a long gap so that people could linger. And so we have that lingering time after the classes so that people can comment or share or ask questions. And sometimes I use what happens in those Q&As after to, well, very often that will then dictate what I teach the following week because certain things came up. So I know, okay, let me clarify that in the next class, or let me teach this other pose that I think will be more effective because a couple people were struggling with such and such a pose. So let me do this alternative next week. So I really am modifying what I'm teaching based on who I'm teaching, even though it's online.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Hi, friends. We're just taking a quick little break from the podcast to talk about the one-on-one consultation work that I do with yoga teachers. I'm not sure if you knew, but I am actually a yoga business coach on top of being a yoga teacher and a yoga business podcast host. One of the things that I love most is sitting down with a client one-on-one and talking about their business. If you think that I get dorky about the business of yoga on this podcast, you have no idea until you work with me one-on-one. I love getting into the nitty-gritty of organizing your day, organizing monthly or even yearly goals. I love talking about how to grow your audience, build your business, and add in all the elements of the business side of being a yoga teacher that you probably weren't taught in yoga teacher training, like building a website, having an email list, adding a freebie to your website for your email list, honing in on who your dream student is, what the niche you like to teach is, and creating programs around that. So if this sounds like something that you would love to dive into over the next couple of months, please reach out. You can head on over to mbomyoga.com/consulting to book a call or send me an email at info@mbomyoga.com and we can chat. All right, back to the episode. And so I'm curious if there's people listening who have maybe been dabbling with online because they've had to over the last couple months with the pandemic, and they're feeling kind of inspired to maybe get started on any of the types of things that you're doing in your business, whether or not it's short sort of master classes or workshops that are recorded, creating, you know, programs that are live and online at certain times, or diving into a membership. Do you have any tips or recommendations for those people?
I certainly have lots of tips and recommendations given the individual circumstances, but the first thing that I would always say is don't be motivated to just put stuff out of some kind of pressure. I mean, obviously sometimes you're in a position where you have to say teach yoga classes online because that's your source of income and you need to put food on the table, then just put stuff out there and do it. But if you have privilege to think a little bit more strategically, then I always go back to, okay, would I want to be doing this a few years from now, or, you know, some version of this? And if not, then don't put it out there. Why put your time and energy into it? Is this leading towards what I really would like to be doing 3 years from now, 5 years ago? Then do it and take your time doing it and start in a small way. As you called it, a beta version. Start with a handful. So for example, with my teaching asana, even though I've been teaching 19 years, I hadn't done much asana teaching online before. So before I launched a membership, I did 1 month and I put it out there just to a relatively small number of people who have studied asana with me before in person. So it was just by invitation. I did a month because I knew there was going to be a learning curve for me. So I always go back to this teaching from one of my teachers who is a Swami, and I think this applies to everything. He would say, start in a small way. It will take you all the way.
I love that. That's beautiful. I think too, that's a really powerful lesson too, is to kind of think, or just a learning, is to think about, you know, there, and I think that, you know, everyone is in a different situation, and looking at the situation that you're in is really important. And I know that there's a lot of teachers who immediately were like, this is my only source of income. I need to get online. I need to do it now. And I have a ton of respect for the fact that people were able to pivot so fast. Like, that is not an easy thing to do, you know, especially when you don't feel like it's necessarily your choice. You know, there's something that happens like coronavirus where, you know, nobody was really planning for that outside of maybe you guys and the other Vedic astrologers around the world who were like, something's coming. But I think for a lot of us, it was like, you know, we didn't know, that wasn't in the plans for 2020. And I think it's been really inspiring and amazing to hear about the yoga teachers who created that YouTube channel or have taken, you know, their classes online via Zoom or other platforms, created a membership, something that they've wanted to do for so long, but it's always been on the back burner because there hasn't been the time. And now all of a sudden it's a need. But I think also looking at the bigger picture, like you said, is really important. And this is something with the studio that I work with here, we've done. I mean, I think it was survival mode for the first couple of weeks. We just got to get this online. Let's learn a lot. And then over the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months, as we become more familiar with it, we've been able to back up and look at, okay, how does this fit into, you know, the 3-year plan for this business or the 5-year plan? How does it become a bigger part of our vision as opposed to like, we just need to teach online? And I think that being able to step back from that has been, it's really cool to be able to do in your own business as well as maybe with other businesses that you work with to really look at like how these things can serve you and your students in the long term. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And I think on that note, it's also so important to just say that not, you know, teaching online is not for everyone and studying online is not for everyone. So I think it's also okay, you know, if you're listening to this or you're seeing everyone go online, it's okay to notice that you might feel an inner pressure to do it because it's what everyone is doing, but it's okay to say, that's not really for me. Maybe I'll do it in the short term, but I know so many teachers and students are really looking forward to that in-person time, which I think will happen. And mm-hmm. I don't think everyone needs to feel like they have to go online or that they have to be online forever. For me, say teaching asana online, that's been so important because I'm in this strange place where I can reconnect now to students that I quote unquote left when I moved away from the Bay Area. Now they can suddenly take classes with me again, which had been my vision. And because I'm teaching these other big online courses and I've got students all over the world, some of them are saying, well, I want to actually practice with you. What are the practices that you're teaching? And so I can reach them. So that's sort of a unique situation for me, even amidst the unique situation of COVID. But I don't think it detracts at all from the very important value of people being in person together. And I'm looking forward to that being part of my work again.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. And I'm also looking forward to being able to practice in person because I'm a natural extrovert. I love human connection. I love physical touch. You know, those are the things that I'm really missing the most right now. And I can't wait till we can be back in person. And that's something I'm very much looking forward to also. And I think that you bring up a really good point. You know, if anyone out there is listening and they're just feeling this like complete resistance to the idea of this, I think it's really important to tune into that because, you know, one of the things I've always aimed to do with MBOM and with this platform is to showcase a ton of different ways to create a yoga business. And I would never want somebody to feel like, oh, I have to do this thing this way. I think there's so many different ways that you can build your business, so many different ways you can, you know, make money, connect with students. And this is temporary. The situation we're in right now is temporary. And I think that, you know, for a lot of people, maybe this opens a door and helps them recognize that they do like teaching online and it is possible. Maybe they can connect with students like you are to places that they lived and taught in previously. I've heard lots of stories of that. And that's been really amazing to hear. But for other people, I've seen like, I don't want to do this. It doesn't feel good to me. I just want to teach in person. And I think that that's okay too. I think that that's like a really important thing for people to remember. Like you were saying, is that we have to kind of tune in inwards. Like we have to have our own yoga coming through in our businesses and really honor that because yeah, teaching online is challenging and it's definitely not for everyone. There was actually a teacher trainee that I was working with. I taught the business of yoga section for a 300-hour just a couple months ago. And we did lots of breakout rooms and I would always partner with somebody so that I could connect with them a little bit deeper. And one of them said, she said, I feel like part of my gift is the in-person thing. Like, is it okay that I don't want to do this online? And I was like, yeah, 100%. That's totally fine. Like, if you feel like your gifts really shine through in person, like, that's something you need to listen to. And that's something you need to pursue once it's okay to be in person again.
Right. Yeah. I think this all goes back to something I think I mentioned earlier, which is looking for confirmation. Like I got confirmation and engaging directly with students and having them feel seen and heard and known is really intrinsic to my work and to my ability to be the best teacher that I can be, whether I'm online or in person. I think things we're looking for, say in quote unquote business, is getting confirmation for what is right for me as an individual. What is my purpose? What is my gift, as that student said? And then pursuing that, regardless of what you see are the gifts of other people. And I actually hope that a lot of teachers feel that their gift is the in-person yoga, because that's so valuable and your students want it. So I think we look for, if you look at someone else doing something and you feel a sense of jealousy or, oh, why aren't I doing that? That's always a clue that that might be a direction that you want to go in. And if you look at what someone else is doing and you feel a sense of dread, that's pretty good confirmation that that's not a direction that you want to be going in. So even if you've under pressure that, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do because that's the current trend, notice the dread or the resistance. And maybe that's a clue that, or a confirmation that that's not for you, which is such helpful information. And you can just close that door gently and look for a confirmation of what are your gifts and what is your purpose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I completely agree. And I've loved this conversation. It's been so amazing chatting with you, hearing about the transitions over the last year. And I just feel so inspired by everything you've created and everything you've done. And so very appreciative of this conversation. And if people want to go check out your business, see what you've done, or even better, maybe join you for a program or a workshop or a class, where can they go to find that?
They can go to Yoga with Kaya. So all spelled out, the word yoga and then WITH and then my name, KAYA.com, and everything's right there. And I've loved this conversation as well.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, Kaya.
Thank you, Amanda.
All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast. I wanted to just take a little moment to talk a little bit more about Nectar of the Gita. So most of you are probably familiar with the text, the Bhagavad Gita. It is often taught and read in yoga teacher training programs. And if you've read it, you know that this text is deep, it's meaningful. There's a lot that we can learn from it. So Kaya draws on the teachings from the Bhagavad Gita and brings that into a comprehensive online immersion that brings yogic philosophy into the things in our everyday life. And that's one of the things that I really love about this program. Kaya does a great job at making traditional yogic philosophy authentically meaningful for your real life. So you can learn what a life of spiritual growth truly is and how to transmute all of life into a self-discovery process. This program is designed to be not dry or theoretical, but to directly nourish and transform your life, relationships, and work, and provides the wisdom you crave around the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So if you are interested in checking this out, she has graciously offered all listeners of Mastering the Business of Yoga a 25% discount. So you can head on over to yogawithkaya, it's KAYA.com/online-programs. So once again, yogawithkaya.com/online-programs, and then select Nectar of the Gita or Nectar of Action and use promo code MBOM, so MBOM25 for 25% off. So once again, MBOM25 for 25% off. All right, thanks so much for listening and I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.